From the Orange County Fire Authority, this is the Pass Along Podcast, where we address firefighter issues from top to bottom, from your helmet down to your boots. Now, here's your host.
Hey everyone, Tim Perkins here. I've got Chief Hunter, I've got Chief Capo Bianco here with me. And you know, one of the last visitations I did, it was asked if we were still going to do podcasts. And I kind of realized it's been a few months, it's been a little while since we've done podcasts. So I thought it would be good to kind of do a recap of our operational priorities for 2024 as the year comes to a close. Maybe talk a little bit about what to expect in 2025 from operations. What is it going to look for you guys? Opportunity here to kind of introduce Chief Hunter. He's been in the operations spot for the last 6-7 months now. And he can kind of share some of his projects and programs and provide some updates for you as well. So I'm going to kind of start. Kind of want to just recap on as we look back on 2024 and the list of our operational priorities on some of the successes that, you know, we had. And, you know, if you remember at the beginning of the year, if you worked in Battalion 2 and Battalion 3, we had a dual response for our MTZ responses for wildland fire. And it was always very confusing with Metronet launching response. We would launch a response, our CADs wouldn't talk. And so we spent a lot of time at the beginning of the year working with Metro Cities, Metronet on those responses, and now we're on a single dispatch, which provides more clarity of the call. The call notes are shared with everybody and a much better way of doing business. So I'm glad we were able to get through that hurdle. We also launched the command and control SOP earlier this year. There was a lot of input from our chief officers, a handful of our captains that put this SOP together, and it now kind of gives us a foundation of how we label things on structure fires, how we conduct ourselves as far as what we make as division alpha. There's always that question of what's ventilation group, what's roof division, and a lot of those elements we've been teaching in our captains and BC academies. So if you've been promoted in the last 5 years, you've had a lot of this training, and so we were able to kind of put something out that gave us a foundation, puts everything on the same page, and kind of gives what it looks like for us as we, you know, run our structure fires. We also completed what I call the mobilization plan. It was always, you know, anytime we would get a vegetation fire that went into extended attack, it seems like we've always staffed things differently. And if you go back as far as you want to go back, you know, maybe the Santiago fire in 07, freeway fire in 08, and fast forward through the Canyon fires, 1 and 2, the Bond, Silverado, Blue Ridge, et cetera, the way we staffed was always a little bit different. So I kind of started this project with Joe Enterline when he was staff captain at the time, and was able to complete it now with Andy Bailey, who sits in that seat. And we got to exercise it during the airport fire. And really what it is upstaffing using a centralized approach. We actually did it in 2007, and that's where some of the idea came from was, in my opinion, looking back at that fire, it seemed to be a better way of upstaffing. And anytime you can bring personnel, equipment, and apparatus to the same place, we can be much more efficient to get engines out on strike teams, task forces, into stations for move up and cover, and whatever the priority is in that moment. So I know the after action, looking at the airport fire and that mobilization plan, is we upstaffed every engine that we could that came out of fleet, that came out of the stations and relief, and everything was staffed. So a few things to tweak going forward, but very successful. I was glad to see we were able to exercise it. We'll probably look at doing more of that in the future. With the airport fire, I'd have to say, Barrick, that of our last fires, the airport fire was very successful when you look at our strategy and tactics and you think about those initial attack decisions that Ryan Higgins made on Engine 18. We had the El Toro hand crew with Brandon Davis as the superintendent. And you think about how many times did they mentally prepare for if we had initial attack fire in Tribuco Canyon, what would that look like? And back in September, they were able to implement a lot of those pre-planning decisions. And then everything that went on after that, with additional strike teams that were coming in after that. And we know that it was certainly 3 days at minimum of a lot of aggressive work. And so we did the after action. We brought in probably nearly 100, you know, folks that Cal Fire, Sheriff Department,
a lot of our chief officers that were in command and control positions. And then eventually you'll see an after action document like some of our other fires. But really, when I look back at that fire, there was so much that was done right. So one last thing, and I'll kind of turn it over to Chief Hunter here for a couple of updates. Certainly the radio comm plan that we're working on, I've said this before on either other podcasts and around the stations, is we've operated on a single tactical frequency for our structure fires as long as I can remember. And over the years, things have become more complex. You know, back in 2018 and looking at 1710 and adding additional engines and trucks and the heavy rescue into some areas, that our structure fires operating on a single tactical frequencies just doesn't make sense any longer. It is not best practice. And so I know a lot of you finished TAG in fourth quarter. You got to see what it was going to look like. We are looking at doing a first quarter TAG to bring folks in, bring the engine and truck companies in, do a couple of live drills where company officers, chief officers can exercise what was taught in that PowerPoint. I know a lot of you guys and gals that have been doing decentralized training. I know there's been a lot of drills in the divisions and the battalions. But we're looking at, kicking this thing off probably April 1st, end of first quarter. We run about 150 working structure fires a year. And for second alarm or greater, it's about 30 per year. And that's a 3-year average. And so when you listen to those structure fires and you're trying to prevent, institute those initial actions, the strategy and tactics that we employ on our structure fires, that single 4 November or 5 November gets muddied up pretty quick. And there needs to be a lane for command and control. And so really excited that we're finally getting to a point where we're going to turn the corner. And there's probably a lot of you out there that have experience. I know Chief Hunter, coming from San Diego, you've got a lot of experience using a command and TAC frequency. Probably a handful or more listening to this have experience from other agencies. So really excited to put this in play for 2025. So I'm going to pause it there before I go into any other updates, and kind of want to welcome, Chief Hunter. He's been up here for 6-7 months at this point, working on a lot of projects with his programs. And so I'm going to kind of turn it over to you. And if you want to start with programs or some of your kind of the projects that I think our personnel will be interested in, kind of turn it over to you.
Okay, great. Thanks, Tim. A couple things before I go into the projects. I wanted to go over the airport fire. Like you said, it was pretty cool to see the collaboration, everybody working together from our operations personnel as our staff to see support the incident. There are a lot of things that definitely went well, a lot of things that we learned on the fly and were able to implement on the ground with the troops as well as in the background supporting the incident as well as the department. So that was a great success in my eyes from the past years of how we've been able to do things. But a lot more efficient and able to support the mission of the incident as well as support the mission to respond to the daily 911 calls. The command and TAC channels, I know from going to drills and hearing the feedback that it can be overwhelming, but I'm here to tell you, like Chief Perkins has said, it's necessary for us as an agency to evolve for firefighter safety on the fire ground, to have clear, concise communications on incidents with the command and attack channel. We just had one greater alarm fire, second alarm occur in Garden Grove. The incident commander ran the incident very well, as well as the divisions and groups and the resources on scene. Really good, clear, concise communications with radio discipline. We're going to continue this training into next year so people do feel comfortable with it. But trust me when I tell you, this will be a great thing for this organization. I'm going to go over the projects and some of the programs that I've been working on. I'll start with investigations. A lot of really good things going on with investigations. We had one of our investigators finish his ATF training to be able to work with that task force. As you saw last year, the investigators have been very, very busy with the vegetation fires as well as the structure fires that they've been investigating. One of the most recent things is Freedom had surgery due to an injury, but Freedom is recovering and should be back to work here by the time this podcast is out. So if you have a chance, give Sean Miller and Freedom a shout out. One of the things I'd like to share with the investigator update is a new podcast coming out called Hot Pursuit. Thank you to Scott Kuhlman as well as Sophia Champeau for developing this. It's about our investigation section and some of the cases that they've investigated. It's like a true crime type of podcast about the investigations. So if you like Dateline, First 48, 2020, 48 Hours, this is a podcast for you. I work with the equipment committee. We have a few things going on here. We're in the process now of evaluating SCBAs. They are compiling the evaluations to figure out the direction that we're going to go into with new BAs and the manufacturers. So we should have that information first quarter of the year out to everybody.
I think you and I went out, you had 3 or 4 days of evaluation. And what I really liked what you guys did was it was kind of a mixed group of individuals. I think you had HAZMAT out there. I think you had USAR. Maybe kind of just who are the folks trialing the breathing apparatus?
So we had a lot of different specialties, as well as the fire ground survival cadre, as well as stations that were selected, just so that we could have a diverse group trying out the SCBAs, because it's not one size that fits all, although we're trying to do that. But we want to make sure that it's a BA that's going to be functionable for the whole organization throughout our specialty disciplines, as well as our firefighters for day in and day out operations. So it was very important to make sure that we captured all that instead of one person going out or one crew going out and going through the paces and trying the SCBA out, and we just had limited feedback. So we wanted to make sure we got as many individuals involved that we could.
That's great.
With the rain gear, has been a very hot topic for the last couple of years. We are finalizing the information to put on an RFP. By the time this podcast comes out, I hope that the RFP will be out for the rain gear. We talked about the SCBAs and the testing that was conducted. We have a RFP out for helmets, and that's for structural firefighting helmets, and then boots. Wildland boots are daily station boots, as well as our structural firefighter boots. We're finalizing that, and hopefully the first part of the year, that RFP will be out as well. I'd like to thank Steve Doman, who's been chairing and running the equipment committee for the past couple years. He is going to be retired by the time this comes out, and Division Chief Matt Sheets will be taking over, and I will still have some oversight over that group as well. Uniforms, uniform handbook. I am working on that with the various labor groups, as well as with the different sections, to make sure that that uniform handbook is accurate and we capture the approved uniforms that are to be worn on duty. The importance of this is from the podcast at Station 29, uniforms was brought up, but we want to make sure you have an accurate handbook to reference to ensure that you're wearing the correct approved department uniform. And that should be out the first quarter of next year as well.
To the panel discussion we had, you know, 3 or 4 months ago, we talked about also getting out of turnouts. And so we're looking for other options for you guys to maybe jump into to run medical aids. And we do not want our personnel wearing dirty turnouts on medical aids and in people's homes, the exposure that, you know, we're putting individuals in. So we're looking for another solution. We're looking at a BDU style type of pants to be able to run calls. And so if you're working out and you're coming back from a structure fire or some other thing that needs to get you out of turnouts, we want to provide an option. And we're kind of looking at, you know, a BDU, you know, style, you know, type of pant. So what else you got, Barrick?
What else I have? HAZMAT, overseeing HAZMAT. Obviously, everybody knows the LI fires are up. We have a process in place of how to deal and mitigate with those incidents, as well as the care afterwards for your PPE and some good, valuable information for the incident commander to assist with decon, as well as possible medical exams and blood draws if needed. With HAZMAT, they're preparing for the Olympics. As many of you know or may not know, some of the Olympics will be hosted in Irvine. So we want to make sure that we're prepared as a HAZMAT team for anything that may occur. We just finished hiring some part-timers. 30 people went through the interview process. They were selected, and they will be attending HAZMAT training that we're going to be putting on here at headquarters, the technician series. Peer support. I know a lot of people have come up to me thinking that I'm in charge of peer support and sending me emails. I'm not in charge of peer support. I'm just assisting peer support. Ryan Kinney and Rhonda Haynes are in charge of peer support. During the rollover with the crew, Ryan was ill, so I stepped in to help out to make sure that Everybody got what they needed. Peer support, we just got approved through JAC to give them some additional training, some CISM training, which will be great to help benefit this organization. And one thing, we talked about comms. I should have said this earlier, but we now have operability. We've had it for almost 2 months with Long Beach Fire Department. And with LA County Fire Department and Battalion 8, we were able to get our radios reprogrammed, the LA County radios, so that it has a lot better functionality for you to use during a incident. And that's all I have for my updates.
Okay. Just a couple other things for me. You know, wildland operations, probably the biggest thing with that group. You know, we've got the Wildfire Resource Center that we're working towards. We found 5 acres that was approved. It's down there off of the Ortega Corridor, off of Gibby. And so somewhere in the near future, we're finally going to have one place that our hand crew, our dozers, can operate out of. You know what Station 18 looks like, Camp 18. You know, the dozers have been working out of, you know, fire stations since as long as I can remember. So we're finally going to have one place for them to work out of. And we're really excited to see what that looks like, working with property management. You know, we're trying to build that facility to house 100 individuals, prepare for the future, whether we grow with additional hand crews, we upstaff strike teams, we've got a place to kind of operate from. And the location couldn't be any better, in my opinion, with the ability to get into South County and also having, you know, Patronus getting on the 241, and it can get us into other parts of the county really quick. Air operations, I want to thank Chief Kuzma. He's had, 2 years assisting with the acquisition of getting the Firehawks, and the crews up there have been working extremely hard to get signed off, trained, and proficient on that airframe. We're getting very close, hopefully in the next couple months. You'll see, I think the recruitment is out for crew chief already, but we are doing recruitments for crew chief and rescuer coming up, so we'll be looking for that. On the TRT side, Station 6 currently has the heavy rescue. They're building that vehicle out. We've been talking about this heavy rescue for quite a while at this point, so excited to see it here. Glad that the crews have it at Station 6. They're making sure it's absolutely going to be operationally ready for calls here in the near future. And, you know, to that point, having Task Force 5, you know, certainly their deployment. So much training goes into all the different sections, the coordinators that keep track of all their personnel. Chief Lowry, you know, running the task force for the last couple of years. And, you know, being able to deploy a Type 1 deployment to Hurricane Helene. You know, we haven't done a Type 1 deployment really, I think, since 2005 with Katrina. So a lot of great opportunity and work and experience came out of that deployment. Lastly, just a couple of other updates. You know, I always get asked, Barry, you probably get the same question on where are the next set of engines and trucks, you know, going to. So I kind of keep a list, and this could change, but currently the next set of engines are going to 71, 73, 74, 19, and 84. We all know we're behind on our truck purchases. We're working really hard to get ahead of that. It's not easy with how long it takes to get a new truck company. So we did buy 2 trucks off the shelf a couple months ago, and they're going to go up to Station 81 and 85. And then very quickly, the next 4 trucks that are coming in, I think in 2025, because it's been delayed, they're called tough trucks. They're 100-footer rear-mounted trucks, and they're going to 49, 59, and then 81 and 85 will also see these trucks when they get here. And then the 2 new trucks that we put in service here in the next couple months, those will immediately go into relief, and we'll start building out our relief trucks as best we can. I've joked for a little while that our relief Sutphins are not relief trucks. They're in service somewhere, frontline. We know they're 30 years old. We should have gotten rid of them a while ago. And I will tell you that we're working as hard as we can to replace some of those relief trucks. So before I turn it over to Chief Capobianco here, you know, Chief Hunter and I will be, you know, penciling out what 2025 looks like for our operational priorities. Certainly the radio comms as we transition to the first quarter, and then also our standards of cover. That'll be a big part of what we work towards in 2025. And we've got, you know, 8 priorities that we've come up with, and we know we need to add depth. We know that we're extremely busy in certain areas of this county, And we're going to be sitting down with the labor groups here pretty soon to kind of go through those operational priorities. So really excited about that to see what the next couple of years look like. You know that the SAFER grant was approved by the board. And one of our top priorities is staffing our 3.0 engines up to 4.0. So we'll be looking at doing that and a set of other priorities that I'm sure we're going to be sharing in more detail, probably first quarter of 2025 as well. So with that, Barry, do you have anything else to add before I turn over to Chief Capobianco?
Just a couple of things. One, with training, we know that the tower is used quite a bit and there's not a lot of training opportunities available, but please take advantage of training opportunities you have in your first two areas. I was recently at a multi-company drill, donated a building for us to use, and it was great to see the crews out there training, engaged. And just remember, when you are training, yes, we're trying to make it as realistic as we can, but please make sure that your strategy and tactics kind of match what you're doing, because again, we're all learning. We have our newer generation of firefighters learning, newer engineers learning. So it's important to try to make it as realistic as you can. But again, utilize those tactics and strategy to make sure that they match what you're doing, so that we're not out training just to train and check in boxes, that we're getting something out of it for everybody. So
great,
that's
point.
It for me.
Couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
So Rob, a lot of times either in visitations or stopping by fire stations, I get asked a lot on what the update is with the ambulance program that we're doing. A lot of people have heard about the alliance model. Can you kind of summarize what that looks like, where we're at? What can you share about where we're at with that?
It's about a year and a half ago that we started working heavily on this. So I'm going to try to summarize it in a short period of time here. But a year and a half ago, we were really looking at the effects of COVID, seeing extended ambulance times, and just seeing that OCFA had very little involvement with our BLS transport system and had a strong belief that OCFA's involvement could make it better. So we developed a scope of work and went to our board of directors. And really what we were looking to do is, how can OCFA improve response times? How can OCFA improve the quality of care? How do we improve sustainability and economics for the cities within OCFA's jurisdiction? And as we all know, 911 is becoming part of the healthcare system. And so call volumes keep going up. How do we sustain what we're doing, and what economics are in there to continue to help us pay for that? And lastly, identify resources to reinvest back into the system. Is there revenue out there that can be reinvested back into the EMS system to continue to make what we're doing better? So really with that in line, we kind of looked at three options when we hired CityGate to do our study, and should OCFA play a bigger role in oversight and management of ambulance contracts? We even threw out, should OCFA be staffing their own ambulances and responding as an OCFA ambulance and compete for those contracts? And then lastly, there's a change across the state with something that's called an alliance model, or public-private partnership. And what that is where OCFA actually partners or subcontracts with a private ambulance company, and you work together to provide a service. And I'll get more into that. But what CityGate, their number one recommendation, and really the reason, let me take a step back as part of the justification as to what we're looking at. OCFA's jurisdiction alone has 10 separate contracts for ambulance service. And those contracts are all in silos. They don't work well together. They don't communicate when they're building new contracts. Five of those contracts are with Orange County EMS, and that covers the majority of our cities. And then we have five 201 cities, all with a separate contract. And so that's Buena Park, Garden Grove, Westminster, Santa Ana, and San Clemente. And as each one of those contracts builds their new agreements, they do not share resources. It's a very different concept than in the fire service, where we have boundary drop and we share resources across the county and even across the state. Yet ambulances kind of stay within their silos. So how can a regional perspective make that better? As we move forward, CityGate, to oversimplify it, CityGate came out with their report, and it recommended for OCFA to concentrate on the county EOAs. So an EOA is an exclusive operating area. There are five of them. And so the way it works is county EMS manages five contracts that covers 17 of our cities, everything but our 201 cities. And so to concentrate on those, because those contracts were coming up first. So let's concentrate on those, and then down the road, let's figure out a way on how to help the 201 cities with their oversight and management and see what that looks like. The recommendation was that for many reasons, but the biggest one with time, remember OSFA doesn't own ambulances. It takes about 2.5 years to get ambulances, and this next county contract starts June 1st of 2025. So the first thought was to go out and solicit partnership and see if any private ambulance companies would like to partner with us. And I'll explain more about what that partnership looks like. But when we went out to RFP, Emergency Ambulance was a partner that was selected as a potential partner in this public-private partnership. We've been discussing, starting to get in the weeds on what that looks like with Emergency Ambulance. There's a few other counties, Contra Costa and Alameda up north, San Bernardino, that are going down this alliance model or public-private partnership. And really, there's been some changes in legislation that allows your county fire department to bid a county contract with an ambulance subcontractor as your partner. And so to kind of give an overview as to what that means, it would be a fully integrated partnership between OCFA and emergency ambulances. Emergency ambulance would complete 911 BLS ambulance transports under the direction of OCFA. OCFA would be the contract holder. Emergency ambulance, if this goes through, would become a subcontracted partner of ours. Both emergency as well as OCFA are interested in multiple. Remember I said there were five EOAs. We're both interested in going after multiple EOAs. Emergency ambulance will supply vehicles and qualified employees, and that will be to support a deployment plan that OCFA develops. So emergency would be the ones supplying the ambulances and personnel. OCFA is providing the oversight and the contract management. We're looking into San Clemente and Westminster model, where ambulances are co-located in fire stations. So we're going to look into that collaboratively with 3631 to see if we can expand that concept as these ambulances become our partners. That would encourage better relationships, more trust, better training. We could train together, EMS tags together. There's a lot of benefits that we've seen in San Clemente and Westminster, so we want to go down that and see if that makes sense. OCFA will be doing all the billing, so if somebody asks why we're doing this and what kind of revenue, remember that was one of the questions. If OCFA does the billing, and the way that it typically works, so in Huntington and Newport and Laguna, they have their own ambulance contracts. They do the billing, so you collect revenue, and then that revenue helps pay for the cost of supplying the ambulances. The other big piece is right now ambulance companies have very strict compliance models. OCFA would take on that liability and that responsibility of ambulance compliance. So the 10 minutes or less, 95% of the time for a code 3 call, 15 minutes or less, 95% of the time for a code 2 call. That would now become OCFA's responsibility based on us being the contract holder. So we have a tremendous amount of work ahead of us to work through what our agreement would look like. Ultimately, we would be putting together a proposal. So the way it works is County EMS, they have an RFP. It's a request for proposals. That draft RFP has not been seen publicly yet, but it did go up to state EMS for review. County EMS is still waiting for that RFP to come back. Once it comes back, it'll be put out on the street. OCFA with a private partner, if we can ensure that the revenues that we can collect through billing can outpace the cost of providing ambulance and EMTs, OCFA has the authority from the board to put in a proposal with the county on multiple EOAs with a private partner, which at this point, Emergency Ambulance is our potential private partner. So the timing on it, we were initially expecting late October, November of last year that the county RFP was going to come out. As of right now, we haven't seen it yet. We're now hearing that maybe January. That would give us a pretty short window to turn around and drop what this proposal will look like. And ultimately, our desire is to develop a good proposal, develop a strong agreement with Emergency Ambulance, and submit a proposal to the county through the county EMS. The current contract for the five county EOAs expires on May 31st, with the new contract starting June 1st. So potentially this ambulance contract could start as early as June 1st. So that's kind of the process on what we're doing now. And then I mentioned the 201 cities in phase two. So that's something we're trying to look at. The ambulance contracts have been a challenge for our 201 city partners. So what role can OCFA play with those cities to try to assist them with the oversight and management, operational oversight of their contracts and watching compliance? So we're just starting conversations with some of those cities to see what role OCFA can do to help those. But I think over the next 6 months, we should have some RFPs come out. We should be making some progress, and the specifics of it, we're gonna kind of hold until the process proceeds. And the reason for that is it's a competitive process. We expect the county RFPs, the five of them, for the county contracts to be highly competitive. And we expect multiple bidders. I would assume Falk will continue to want to work in this county. And we'll see who else comes in. And but we expect it to be very competitive. And so for OCFA to maintain some level of level playing field and have our competitive advantage, a lot of that is being discussed, and it's going to be put in a proposal. It's a sealed bid and sent off. So as we get updates that we can share, we'll continue to do that. If you have questions that come up, I'm always available for a phone call or pull me aside if you have some questions, if you have some interest. But we're going to keep pushing through to see how OCFA can make a difference and hopefully improve resiliency and sustainability and the economics of BLS ambulance transport, and ultimately look at how do we start sharing ambulance resources, just like we do every day with engines and trucks and paramedic units and everything else we do. So trying to apply what comes naturally to us is second nature, and a strong mutual aid and automatic aid system, and can we apply that to a BLS ambulance system to see what role we can play. But anyway, I think that's kind of a quick summary. I'm always available for questions, so don't hesitate to reach out to me if I can assist you in any way.
All right, Rob, thanks for the update. Appreciate that. Like I said, we're extremely busy up here. We know that you guys are extremely busy this last year. We threw a lot out at the field, so we really appreciate what's been done this last year. So thanks very much for tuning in, and look forward to seeing you in 2025. Have a great new year, and we'll see you out in the field. We'll be right back.